podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Network's 200 radio stations all over the country on Saturday, April 25th, 2020. This is episode 1689. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from the TWiT LastPass studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless. Whether they're working in the office or remotely, visit LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of the Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost, because everything is online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their three-month introductory plan, and you'll get the plan shipped to your door free at mintmobile.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, time to convene once again to discuss the ways strange and terrible of technology, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. Let me give it to you again. Slow. Ready? You got a pencil? You don't need to write it down. I'll tell you where you can get it anytime. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can Skype out and get to me. I also keep a copy of the phone number on the website. Everything's on the website. Everything. And it's free. There's no sign up. You don't have to log in or anything. Just go to techguylabs.com. I don't even think you have to type www. You just go to techguylabs.com. Easy to remember. I'm the tech guy. I'm in my lab coat with my Bunsen burners, my protective eyewear, and my face mask. And here I am, sheltering in place in my lab, Tech Guy Labs. We don't know why they're plural. Could be just Tech Guy Lab. Why are there two of them? I don't know. Don't know. But that's what it is. TechGuyLabs.com. Maybe it's my doppelganger in the other lab. That's probably what it is. I think it was Thursday, watching a little TV as one does, nothing much to do late at night, except look at the moon or look at the screen glowing in your living room. So I was doing the latter, and then my phone went, stopped working, rebooted. So the little white apple on the screen, I said, what the heck? It was the second time that day it had happened. Now I know why. Oh, some wag sent me a text message which crashed my phone. Yes, it's happening again. This is not the first time. It's the same software that's causing the problem. It's what we call a rendering engine. Boom, boom. It's the thing that draws the pictures and the text on the screen. And it is what we call an interpreter. It gets information, interprets it, and puts it on the screen. The problem with interpreters is if you're not careful, they can be sent something that they go bonkers with. And as every good hacker knows, yes, I know you know this because you're a good hacker. Every good hacker knows that if you can get a computer to go bonkers, you're one step closer to getting it to take over it. To getting in its guts and saying, I can do what I will with my, this little machine. Crashes are usually a prelude to a hack. As soon as they figure out how to crash it, they go, okay, we were able to jump to memory somewhere we shouldn't have. That's good, because that's what's happening. Now, if we could just put something evil at that spot, now we're talking. So if you you won't see it because it'll crash. This is the really sad thing, is it'll crash it without you even opening the messages program or looking at it. It also works in other messengers like Telegram, Facebook Messenger, and it works on the iPhone, the iPad, the Macintosh, and the Apple Watch. It's everywhere. It's a string of characters, Cindy characters, and the Italian flag emoji. The Cindy language. You don't have to understand the Cindy language to be able to use it. You just need to paste it in. It's being spread around. Cindy is one of the many languages in India. And the issue is apparently fixed in the next version of iOS 13.4.5, which is in testing right now. Not available to others. So expect maybe even today, and it would be worth it if you, and it's just a little information. You know, my wife said, oh, you should take it in. I said, oh, I guess there's something wrong with my phone. But then I found out, no, it's something not wrong with my phone. It's doing what it's supposed to do. This is one of a number of bugs. All of a sudden, what they call zero-day flaws, because they're already in the wild before anybody even knew about them. It's, as Vice says, the rarest fish in the cybersecurity ocean, which is really stretching a metaphor a little too far, I think. It takes advantage of vulnerabilities, yes, of course, in Apple's normally secure operating system. Discovered by a company in San Francisco called ZecOps. They all have funny names. It was announced on Wednesday that a few of its customers were targeted with two different zero-day exploits for iOS last year. Apple will also patch these, we presume. Zero days are bad because it means there's no fix and it's already being used. Typically, they're discovered and used by nation states, spy organizations. And they're usually targeted against diplomats, spies, political figures, that kind of thing. VIPs. Sometimes it's industrial espionage. They target executives of big companies. In fact, that's what ZecOps does. Is they secure executives. Get it? ZecOps. They secure executives from big companies. And I guess two of their guys got hacked. It's a remote zero click, if you really want to get specific. That means you don't have to do anything. They could just like this, I bet it's related to this message hack where somebody, you don't even have to open messages. Your phone will just crash if somebody sends you the text. I bet they're related. So as always, look for patches. You know, there's vulnerabilities in all operating systems, some more than others. Apple makes a lot of money because people like me say it's safer, it's more secure, and it's true, there are fewer of these, but it's probably important to understand nothing is perfect. And anything that is attacked with sufficient resources and vigor, the kinds of resources and vigor that a nation state might have, you know, the CIA or the NSA or the Saudis or the Israelis or, well, there are many, many nation states that have their own hackers, and then they pay lots of money, millions of dollars sometimes, for these little zero days. And then they keep them. You know, what is normally done by the security community is what we call responsible disclosure. A security guy finds a flaw and goes, ooh, yikes, and then contacts the company and says, you got 90 days to fix this. The clock is ticking. 90 days is the typical amount, 3 months. Usually considered enough for a company to figure out what the problem is and send out a patch. The reason they don't just say, hey, fix it and walk away is because if they found it, somebody else could find it. And you don't want companies to take too long to fix flaws like this. You want them to get right on it. So you give them a deadline because, you know, we're human. We work better with a deadline. So the clock is ticking for a zero day because it's revealed. It's too late. It's out there. You don't have 90 days. You got no time at all. And Apple's pretty good about this. And I imagine there's some number of engineers working as fast as they can to figure out what it is and how they can fix it. And there's a good reason to, because the bad guys are out in force right now. They are loving this quarantine thing. Ransomware attacks, in fact, now are bigger than credit card theft. 1 in 5 malware or hacking incidents, according to research by a cybersecurity company, Trustwave, 1 in 5 involves a ransomware attack. And that was in 2019. I think it's on the upswing. That's a 400% increase over 2018. It means that ransomware attacks are more common than credit card and financial data breaches for the first time ever. But I guess that's not really a surprise to anybody, is it? Nope. 8888-ASK-LEO, website techguylabs.com. There's a chat room. We go 24-7 in our chat room. There are wonderful people in there, family-friendly. It's irc.twit.tv. You can go there in your browser. And Kim's here. She's answering the phone. She's going to take your calls in a bit. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, is coming up. Johnny Jett, our travel guy. We got a big show planned for you. The Gizwiz 2 today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls coming up. It's a miracle. She shows up every weekend, the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. Kimmy, don't take no chef. Hello, Kimmy.
It's the only place I get to go to all week. I mean, it's a privilege.
I see your Facebook. I see you go out and about. You hike.
I do.
You get out in the fresh air, and I think that's a wise thing to do as long as you socially distance.
Yep. I went yesterday, found a little patch of a little beach. Not really a beach, but just a little right on the water, and just sat out there for an hour and a half.
Oh, how
and
nice.
Watched people kayak. And
oh, how nice.
Watched a guy with a electric surfboard. I guess it's called hydrofoiling or something like that.
That's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it was very cool. I'm like, man, that looks fun.
You know, I see those things, and I also watch the people with the wind sailing and stuff, and I think, gosh, it looks so smooth and elegant. And then I try it, and it's like, this is hard.
Yes.
You got to be strong to do this.
I think you probably have to have a good core to do that, despite the fact that it's electric. But I think it's probably a lot easier than actual surfing.
That's really
kind
hard.
Kind of like your bike that you rode in on today.
I rode in on an electric bike. You saw me. Isn't that nice? I love my electric bike.
That looks fun, too.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cheating, but I get it. I'm lazy.
this is life. This ain't a test. This is the real deal.
Yeah.
I'm not cheating. You can't.
Electric bike. If it could take me up the hills and I don't
Well,
that's
what it is. That's what it is. It's for the hills. And you still pedal and stuff. It's nice. I like it. I'm a big electric bike
fan. They do look very heavy, though.
They're really heavy. So if you lose power, it's a lot of work. They're like 60 pounds. So yeah, they're not light.
Yeah, you don't want to lose power when you're going up a 90-degree grade.
Yeah, it would serve me right, wouldn't it?
Mm, yeah.
Who should I talk to today? You got somebody good for me to start our show?
I got a lot
here?
Of good people, actually. Yeah. Let's go to Trevor in Fort Worth.
Okay.
Line 1.
Thank you, Kimmy.
You're welcome.
Line 1, Trevor, Fort Worth, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, sir. Hello, I have a daughter with a special needs. And she's becoming a teenager, so we need to get her a phone that can only text and call. Not ready to get her on the wild, wild west of the internet.
Gosh, I know. That's such a scary prospect, isn't it?
And I've looked at, like, the Lightphone 2 and the ZT Altair 2 online and was wondering if one of those you would recommend or something else for her.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of experience, unfortunately, with these phones. I got my mom a Jitterbug, which is for older folks because it has nice big numbers and easy to read. And it's not a smartphone. It's just what we call. You'd think the opposite of smartphone would be dumb phone, but they don't want to call it a dumb phone. So it's a feature phone, as in it has very few features. She didn't like it. She said, what are you doing to me? I want a smartphone. And I'm not sure what your daughter's needs are, but it is the case that there are a lot of apps for people with special needs available on smartphones. So don't rule it out completely. Maybe not now. She's still pretty young. And, you know, mainly you want it for safety, right? So she can reach you and you can reach her and she can contact her friends, stuff like that.
Yeah, she has a lot of issues with impulse control. So You know, it's like...
Yeah, I think a smartphone might be risky, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that completely. So constraints, I don't know, and I'm going to ask our audience if they're listening, if they've used any of these. I mean, you can, of course, go to your local cell carrier, and they're essential businesses, so they're open in most areas. And you can get a feature phone, not a smartphone. They still sell them. They're inexpensive. A lot of companies make them. Tell them, I don't want a screen, a big screen. I don't want a computer. I just want a phone. And all of them will do texting. Although texting is a lot harder. Do you remember the days before smartphones when you had to use something called T9 to text? You'd type, because there was only the dialing numbers, right? So if you wanted to type the letter C, you have to type A, B, C on the one key and like that. The two key, I guess that was. So those are harder to text. Does she want to text at all?
Yeah, she wants to text. So we actually tried a feature phone, and the issue was we got it disconnected, so you can't connect to Facebook or the internet, but then she still has Wi-Fi. So, and then we're having issues with that, and I'm not going to get into...
No, I understand. That's fine. You don't have to get...
Yeah.
You got a smartphone, not a feature phone. Feature phone won't get her on Facebook or anything like that.
No, the feature phones do... Some of them do have...
Some of them do now? Oh, that's not a feature phone. Yeah, that's a half smartphone. They used to make... Microsoft used to make the perfect phone. Oh, man, it was for kids. It was called the Kin. It was out for 3 months. It had a keyboard, so that's kind of what you're looking for, is a keyboard so she can text, but not any of the internet features. You can, let me think about this, if you could disable, on higher-end smartphones, you can control what she can do. There are, for instance, on the Apple iPhones, there are very good parental controls, and you can absolutely keep her off the internet or, control what she can do. Those are a lot more expensive, though. So, and then you also probably want GPS in a phone, because location, I would imagine, is important, so you can keep an eye on where she is. Is that right?
That's really secondary. I'm just kind of, texting and calling, like a light phone, too, but you're saying you don't have any...
Yeah, I've never used it. Let me look at it here real quickly. Yeah, and of course, the best thing to do anytime you're looking at something like this is not only get reviews from the light phone site, but get reviews from other places, particularly from the places that the phones are aimed at. It's a phone for humans. A phone is a tool that should serve the user. A light phone is a phone that respects you. Wow. Wow. I respect you. Yeah, small screen's got... It's pretty simple, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, this looks good, and it looks like it has a lot of controls so that you can say what she can do. For instance, turn off social media. Oh, actually, it doesn't even support social media, nor does it support email. It's really just a simple phone. Yeah, this looks good, but again, I don't have any experience. Here's why I like it. It does have a keyboard. So from the point of view of texting, it's an on-screen keyboard. She'd be a lot happier. Let me just keep listening. Maybe somebody will call in. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I wish I'm sorry I don't have more. Sorry I don't have more concrete advice. This looks pretty good. This light phone looks like it's specifically for people, not necessarily who want a... it's not for people who don't want a complicated phone. It's for people who want a... limited phone, and they have their own phone plans. Oh, it's not available yet. You have to pre-order it, so no one will have used it. This looks like a really good idea. It's very similar to the Kin, actually. Can call, text, set alarms, use a calculator. This is very simple. It does have Yeah, okay. It does have, looks like an e-ink screen. I would guess that's what it is, which means the screen wouldn't be very fast. me see what they're charging for it. $350. Unlocked 4G LTE cell phone. So you still have to buy. It looks like they sell self-service, but you might have to. You could also. Yeah, they have a $30 a month plan. That's probably a good plan because there's no data. Although, if you already have a plan, you might be able to get her on the a family plan for less than $30 a month if you don't do data. Data is the expensive thing. For instance, Google Fi is $20 a month for unlimited text and calling. It's the data that's expensive. This is interesting. I'm not familiar with this, the Lite phone. Yeah, it's on Indiegogo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What is hip? I'll tell you. It's this guy right here, this cat, man. He is so hip. It's Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek, and our resident AV guy. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
You read his reviews on techhive.com. I read your review of this hi-fi, i-fi hip DAC, which is a little digital audio
converter.
Speaking
of what is hip.
Yeah. Plug it into your phone, or actually I use it off my computer, because most computers, you could listen on the headphone jack, but they don't have very good audio built in.
No, they don't.
So getting an external audio adapter that takes the bits, which are, of course, perfect, coming out of the US, well, they're unmodified anyway, coming out of the USB port and converting it inside this external device and then plugging your headphones into it. It sounds wonderful. So I even on the MacBook, they don't put very good converters. So I now listen whenever I'm listening on my computer, MacBook or Dell, I will listen through this. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Really like it.
Yeah, it's great to have a separate box that's purpose-built, purpose-designed and made for that one function.
Right.
And it really sounds really good.
Yeah, techhive.com, you can read his review of the iFi hip DAC.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it looks like a hip flask. I think that's why they call it a hip DAC.
I know. Because it's got that big, nice volume knob. Nice control feel on that
volume
knob.
Oh, I love the click and the smoothness of the knob.
Smoothness of it. It's very solid.
Yeah, I'm very really happy with it. So what's up with you in your world, Mr. Wilkinson?
Well, speaking of reviews on TechHive, I just posted one yesterday, I think. We were talking last week, you remember, about inexpensive soundbars?
Yes.
You know, I wanted to get people to, you know, get a soundbar for your TV. If you're inside and you're hunkered down, you're watching a lot of TV, you want something better than the TV sound itself.
Right.
So you can get a soundbar for under $200, and it'll sound a whole lot better than the TV. Well, there's the other end of that spectrum. I just reviewed the Sennheiser Ambio soundbar, which lists for $2,500.
Yikes. Yikes. And that ought to sound very good.
Oh, it does. It does. It sounds really good. Now, it's massive. It's I forget exactly how wide it is, but it's as wide as my 65-inch TV. It weighs over 40 pounds.
This is the – I didn't realize it's the only soundbar Sennheiser makes.
Correct. They only make this one. And believe it or not, it's the second most expensive soundbar on the market. The most expensive is from Creative Technology.
Huh.
It's called the Sonic Carrier X-Fi. It's $4,000.
Wow. Creative, is that the same as the old Creative Labs?
Yep.
They bought like a bunch of companies, like Cambridge Soundworks and stuff. So they have some decent audio chops.
Correct. And in fact, last week I was talking about the other end of the creative spectrum. They have something called the Creative Stage. $137 on Amazon.
Wow.
And, you know, for a low-cost soundbar, it's highly recommended by CNET. So, you know, they've got some chops for sure.
Look at all the speakers on this Ambio. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 drivers.
Yep.
Wow.
And two of them are firing upward. And so what it's trying to do.
Oh, the Atmos.
It's Atmos compatible. It's trying to create what's called an immersive sound field. So
how does that work? How well does that work?
Well, what it's supposed to do is take the speakers on the side and the speakers firing up and reflect them off the walls and ceiling to give you an immersive sound field. And that was the one thing about this soundbar that I didn't think worked very well.
Should you, if you did this, would you want to mount it above the TV as opposed to below the TV?
No. You'd want to mount it below the TV.
Okay.
But you need it really need in order to get that immersive sound field with sound coming from above and sound coming from the sides as well as from the front, you need a pretty square rectangular room without any breaks in the wall. You need essentially a perfect room.
A perfect cube.
Well, not a cube. No. A cube
square,
would be
anyway.
Bad.
Oh, you don't want a cube. Okay.
No, because then you have sound. You have reflections in the room, and at certain frequencies, those reflections build up into what are called standing waves. And if you have different dimensions of the room cause standing waves at different frequencies, and if all the dimensions are the same as in a cube, then all those standing waves are at the same frequency, and they really build up. So what you want to do is you want a room with different dimensions in all three dimensions.
You want what they call a rectangular.
Yes, exactly.
Which is a rectangular cube.
An oxymoron if I ever heard one.
Well, it's a three-dimensional rectangle is a rectangular.
Exactly,
Or a cuboid. Yes, they call them cuboids. I had to look it up. I'm sorry, I didn't know.
That's quite all right.
Yes.
That's quite all right. Anyway, so if you had such a room, then I'm sure this Ambio would create a pretty effective immersive sound field. In my room, I put it in my main home theater, which is pretty rectangular, but it's got an open closet on one side where I have my equipment rack.
Why?
And so, why?
Why did you put a door in this room? You've ruined its
Well, you know, it was a pre-built house when we bought it. That's the way it was.
How dare they put a door there?
I know. A closet. A closet.
I'm just teasing you. I'm just teasing you.
I know. Anyway, so it wasn't perfect. Now, the higher I found this very interesting. When I listen to things, there's a Dolby Atmos demo disc. And among the things on this demo disc is a rainstorm. And you think, okay, good. Rain coming from above. That would be the perfect Atmos type of sound. And indeed, when I played that, I could hear the rain coming overhead, but only the high frequency parts. You know, the higher noise sound did appear to be coming from overhead. So, but the lower mids and lows did not. So, and watching a movie with a lot of, you know, Atmos stuff coming from all around you, most of it was in the front. So now the sound quality of this soundbar is phenomenal. Mids and highs, the lows were especially impressive. And this is without a subwoofer. This thing does not come with a subwoofer. It's rated down to 30 hertz.
What?
Which is really low. And that bore out when listening to real material.
You could hear the tubby bass.
Absolutely. Well, it wasn't even tubby. It was
this
nice
guy plays
tight.
A tubo. He knows tubby.
I know tubby, believe me. So, you know, that was super impressive.
Wow.
So I was.
Would you want to add it? I guess it sounds like you don't need to add a subwoofer.
I didn't feel a need to add a subwoofer.
Well, good
now,
at that
you know,
price.
Sure. You add a subwoofer that'll really go down to 20 hertz or even below. Sure, you'll get that last.
Yeah, we have a subwoofer, but unfortunately, it rattles the walls.
well, there are ways around that. There are ways to fix that.
Maybe it's a little too loud. I should probably turn it down.
Well, yeah, you could put isolation feet on it. That would help.
Yeah. No, it's not, it's got little conical isolation feet. It's the problem is there's stuff hanging on the walls. It's not there aren't solidly on there. Like we have a Hawaiian oar. That's the thing that rattles. It goes
because it's suspended there.
It's just suspended there. It's okay. it's kind of fun.
Well, yeah, but it's distracting.
Well, when there's an earthquake on the movie, it's good. Then we think it's a real earthquake.
And it's a real earthquake.
It's a real earthquake. This sounds really good, but the price, boy, that's kind of a showstopper,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It really is. $2,500. Yeah. I, in the article, I put up, I gave an example of a real 5.1.2 system.
Would be less than that. Yeah. You could go to ELAC and get five speakers and a sub.
Yep.
Probably around that price point. Yep. Scott Wilkinson, yep. Read the review, techhive.com. Scott joins us every week right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Boy, I'm so tempted. I have the Sonos soundbar on on the one of our TVs, and it sounds pretty good. It's okay. And
sure.
It's a Sonos. We were listening to an audiobook on it the other day. All right, I'm going to get
you. Does it have a sub?
No. I could. The one in the. Yes, we have two, actually. I have one of the more modern ones, and then the old one has a sub and surrounds, too. We got the whole setup. That's the one in the gym. That's Lisa's TV. All right. Let me set you up, and you can do... Are you going to stay in the top of the hour for us?
Oh, yeah. Happy to.
All right.
So, hey, everybody. Hope everyone's staying safe. Dr. Mom, Grandma, you mean like the Tacoma Narrows Bridge collapse? Talk about building up of standing waves. Yeah, exactly. Now, a subwoofer in a cubicle room is not going to cause it to collapse unless you've got one hell of a powerful subwoofer in there, I suppose, but unlikely. but that was really something.
Unless somebody's weakened the walls by putting a closet in there.
Yeah. This particular room that we chose for the home theater is a little strange because it can't be considered a bedroom because you can't access it except there's a hallway that goes through one side of it. It doesn't have a closable door, essentially, that lets you get through the rest of the house.
So it's your TV room.
It's the TV room, right. Yeah. But it has a closet in it.
Yeah. No.
In a way, I wish... I had thought to, close off that closet, but it's a great place to put my equipment
rack. Your gear. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes sense.
So
yeah.
I went ahead and did it. You know, normally I'm listening to real speakers, so it's not really a problem. It's just when you have a reflective system like this, or the big creative Sonic Carrier Wi-Fi, X-Fi it's called, they both rely on reflecting things off the walls. Now, reflecting off the ceiling, no problem. It's a nice flat ceiling, drywall, plenty reflective, no problem. Although, as I said during the segment, I found it very interesting that only the high frequencies really were reflected effectively and sounded like they were coming from overhead. So the example I gave in that review, by the way, is a speaker system from SVS. Which is like ELAC, another good company that does value-oriented speakers, high quality but not tremendously expensive. And I did a 5.1.2 system from them for $1,900, and then a $600 7.2 channel Denon AVR for $600, $2,500. There it is. Now, that, as I say in the review, that's a hell of a lot more complicated to set up. So, you gotta take that into consideration as well. And if you don't want that complication, then something like this Ambio soundbar, could be something good. But in order for it to be, as I said, most of the sound came from the front to me. It was beautiful sound, but it came from the front. It was not immersive, so to speak, except for those high frequencies coming from overhead. So... you got to pick your poison. You got to decide what's important to you. And that's what you got to do.
That's a good insult. You are just not immersive. Just got to remember that.
Yeah, I got to remember that.
I had hopes you'd be more immersive.
Hey, right. Loquacious. Good to see you. And now I got to
go. Can you stick around?
You betcha.
All right, sir. We'll see you in a minute. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You can tell, you can actually date, I believe, music by the synthesizer in it. This clearly comes from an era where we were still pretty much enamored of the synthesizer. I'm going to guess 82, 83. Really? I got it. Early 80s, New Order. Yeah. Even the drum is a synthesizer. That's how you know. 8888 Ask Leo. Isn't that true, though, when new technologies come along, we're all infatuated and, you know, use it like crazy? This came out March 7th, 1983. Whew, man. Nailed that one. But I think of virtual reality, right? We were all infatuated with that, and I ran out and bought a Oculus Quest and the Oculus. I bought the first Oculus when it was still a Kickstarter project, and the HTC Vive, and yeah, you know. Then after a while, you use it and go, eh. What some technologies are, you know, live up to their hype, and then some don't. The fastest selling consumer electronic gadget of all time. What do you think it was? It was the Microsoft Xbox Kinect, K-I-N-E-C-T. It was an attachment for your Xbox that could see you, and it had depth. It could even sense the blood pulsing through your veins, so there were exercise programs that would notice that you're not working hard enough and say, step it up. It would recognize you when you came into the room. It would even pop up a little thing on the screen that said, hi, Leo. And it sold so well in the first few months, and then nothing. Zip. Remember the Nintendo Wii and the Wiimotes that you were joysticks that you could that would sense the motion of your hands? Huge. Goodbye. Technology is littered with these, and then there's hardware like the iPhone that started strong and got stronger. Is that a way of measuring the actual true value of something? Maybe. The Wiimote or the Xbox Kinect, those weren't all that valuable. Even VR goggles, not that valuable. But the iPhone, that's valuable. 8888 Ask Leo. Sue O'Fallon, Illinois. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sue.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Oh, I'm getting so bored.
Aren't we all? Yeah.
I'm getting so bored, I decided to call you and argue.
Oh, good. There's nothing better to resolve boredom than a nice argument.
Right. No, I have been a Windows user since our first computer in 96. So it's been 24 years. And I have never experienced problems that would make me want to use something else. And I know that you're a big proponent of Chromebooks. And I did buy a Chromebook to travel with, and I'm using it now to do video chats with the family.
Nice. But that's a good thing.
I just wonder if maybe if you would stipulate when you tell people, when you talk to people about, you know, when they're having problems with Windows, that it requires maintenance and wisdom and sensibility.
Things that are like generally that. Lacking in the wide populace. So you have a different situation, Sue. First of all, in 96, you didn't have a lot of choice. Right. There was nothing simpler. You either had to get a general purpose operating system, Mac or Windows, or no computer at all. And most people in the 90s bought Windows, including me, because that was the dominant player in the field. So you didn't really have any choice. You've been lucky because over those 24 years, you've become proficient. And so you know what to do. You've never had a virus?
No.
Never had it crash on you?
No.
Wow, you've been very lucky.
I've been very efficient in taking care of my computers.
Here's something, though, I would ask you. Right now, if you think about it, I was just thinking about it this morning because my battery was dead on my on my Linux laptop, so I switched over to the Mac. And I realized it didn't matter much whether I used Windows, Linux, Mac, even a Chromebook, because 99% of what I was doing was in a browser. Do you find that that's the case? What are you doing that requires Windows?
Well, I do have I have two different computers. I'm on the one in what I call the office. I have, you know, the scanner, printer, and all that kind of stuff. Everything, the big speakers and everything. I do business, not really business stuff, but copying, scanning, and things like that. And I don't know. It just seems like it would be something for me to learn all over again to even try to do that.
Well, there's certainly that to be said, yeah. I mean, when I talk about why no one should buy Windows, I'm not talking about you, obviously. If somebody's comfortable and knows how to use Windows and it feels relatively safe, of course I will stipulate that that's appropriate for you. But I wouldn't recommend... And I'm particularly thinking of older folks who don't have a lot of technology experience. For them to go out and become Windows experts just doesn't seem like a good plan.
I'm older than you.
No, it's not the age. It's just the willingness and readiness to kind of become a computer geek. And I do stipulate that. I say, look, if you want to be an IT guru, go ahead. Get Windows. If you don't mind doing your own IT, really the full statement is Windows is designed for people who have IT experts to hand, an IT department at work, or are willing to become an IT expert themselves. I would say you probably are at this point, Sue, having used it for 24 years. You're expert enough to keep it running safely and reliably. But a lot of people either aren't IT experts, don't want to become IT experts, or new to it. And I just mentioned older people because I think younger people just grew up with this stuff. So they probably, it's probably familiar to them. But if you're buying a computer at this point, the default, I admit, you go to a big box store is a Windows PC. But I want to really shake people up and say, maybe that's not the right choice, the best choice right now. You know, last Tuesday, Microsoft had its Patch Tuesday, fixed 113 security flaws. 113.
Wow. I'm glad they did it, not me.
Yeah, but you wonder what they missed, and if you're patched, and I, you know, part of it is I'm conditioned because I talk to people who are having problems. So people call me all the time saying I haven't updated in 2 years because I can't because they're stopped, things like that. And those people are at great risk. There's 113 new flaws they have to be aware of.
Yeah.
So in general, if you're new to computing or you don't want to become an IT expert, I think getting an iPad or getting a Chromebook, you know, the Chromebook's not bad, is it?
I don't know. All I use it for is Facebook and email when we travel. Of course, now we can't travel. So.
Right. I know.
Pull it out. Every once in a while.
Well, and also, you know, if you're really a computer guru, I would look at Linux because that's the next step for you. And I think it's better maintained and designed, frankly, than Windows is. Windows, Microsoft is a very competent company. I'm not saying they're not competent to do it, but they have a different mandate. They've got to keep software, 30-year-old software, running on their platform. So there's not a whole lot they can do. They have to support all this old stuff. That's kind of a disadvantage from their point of view. I don't disagree with you, Sue. I appreciate it. I think you're right to call and question. But I'll stand by my remarks. If you're new to computing and you don't want to become an IT expert, if you aren't already, you know, the one other exception is gaming, because gaming isn't very good anywhere. Well, I guess iPad games are okay, but the hardcore gamers want a PC. And now I give you Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru.
Thank you so much. Hey, one thing that somebody in the chat room, let me see if I can find who it was. Midnight Rider, good old Midnight Rider, said, the thing that needs to be incorporated into high-end soundbars is a microphone that sets the delays to make up for room deformities. You're exactly right. And the Sennheiser has exactly that comes with it. I'm sorry I didn't mention that in the segment, but, you know, time.
Is it Odyssey or is it something comparable?
No, it's its own thing. And it comes with this microphone is actually really cool. It's 28 inches tall on its own very sturdy metal base. And you can set it anywhere. And it's got a long cable on it. And it plugs into the front of the soundbar. And you run a calibration routine. You know, you just say, okay, go. And it plays a series of sweeping tones. So it goes bleep, bleep from all the different speakers. And the low frequency one, as I mentioned, I did mention that I was impressed with the low frequency. And the low frequency one was very impressive because it could really get down there. So it runs these sweeps. And the microphone, you place the microphone ideally at ear height of where you're going to sit. And it runs these sweep tones, and then it does a bunch of calculating and calibrates itself to that room. And, of course, I did that. And I still felt like it was mostly in front of me. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that, that yes, it does come with a microphone. It does a thing similar to Odyssey. It's its own thing. It's not Odyssey. Sennheiser's own thing, but it serves the same purpose. So there you go. I've also been talking here in the chat room with Heidelberger about, and I don't quite still quite get what he's asking about, something about a digital input to zone two of an AVR. So an AV receiver typically has a bunch of inputs, you know, for your satellite receiver and your Roku and so on, and a bunch of different things. And many of them have the ability to send different signals out to different zones or rooms in your house. So you've got the main zone, which is the room where the AV receiver sits. It's typically a home theater or your main media system. And then you might, you know, send a signal out to zone two, which might be the bedroom. Or zone three, which might be the den, or whatever. And I still don't quite understand, Heidelberger. Hopefully you can clue me in here, that he was asking for a digital input to zone two. AV receivers have a bunch of inputs that aren't zone specific, and then you assign which ones go to which zone. So... It, you know, I think he said he wanted to play his Roku audio in zone two. That should be completely possible with most multi-zone AV receivers. Let's see. James, do you have any information resource on effects of slanted ceilings on speaker sound or placement? I don't know of any place I can point you, but I can certainly say that I do know for a fact that if you wanted to set up an Atmos system with speakers pointing upwards to reflect back down to you for the overhead channels, many Atmos home Atmos systems do that, slanted ceilings don't work. They just don't work. Now, other than you have to have a flat ceiling, and it has to be fairly reflective. Now, if you have a slanted ceiling, cathedral ceiling or something like that, how does it affect a non-Atmos system where you just have speakers around you, maybe only in front and two-channel system or a 5.1 with surrounds and so on? Certainly the architecture, the shape of that room will affect the sound and the sound modes, the room modes, that is these standing waves I was talking about earlier. So it will affect that. And the architectural acoustics of it are probably too complicated for like an article like I would write. That's a complicated subject. There are many, many books written on architectural acoustics. And if you don't have a rectangular type room, then things get very complicated. So that's not an easy answer, I'm sorry to say. Let's see here. Lumpy, did I like the end of Picard season one? Yes, I did. I enjoyed that show. It wasn't perfect. I was a little dismayed at how evil Starfleet has become. but I thought the overall the piece was very nice. The for season one I enjoyed it more than Discovery. I don't know how you guys feel about Star Trek Discovery. It's the other Star Trek show on CBS All Access. I watched the first season and I just didn't get into it. So I haven't watched the second season. So, but I did watch Picard, and I'm looking forward to season two of Picard. One of the things I like about Picard, and I'm sure any Star Trek fan does, is the appearance of old friends, right? Troy and Riker being married, having a daughter, living in a cabin in the woods. I thought that was great. Jeri Ryan as Seven of Nine, I'm not sure. You know, she was in Voyager, so how does she come back into a next-gen kind of storyline? Well, she does, and she's pretty badass, so that was cool. I would love to – and Data, of course, shows up, and one of Noonien Soong's descendants, I should say, played by Brent Spiner. So that's all very cool. I enjoy that. Dr. Mom, Grandma, have I watched The Selling of America on HBO? No, I haven't. But it sounds like you call it a dark story, and I'm sure it is. So I will watch it because it's probably an important story, but dark. Zach Gowan, have I seen The Last Dance? No. What is that? I don't know what that is. So let me know. Friendly Manitoba. Yeah, there's some kind of gruesome, gross stuff on Picard. I guess TV shows have to have that these days. I don't like it. But I guess they had to do it. Let's see. Scooter X. Oh, let's see. What's a good movie to watch to really test a complete sound system? There are a bunch. I love Gravity for its Atmos effects. And it sounds like I'm about ready to be done. Zach Gowan, Bulls. I'm not a basketball fan, so.
Yeah, you'd have to be into Michael Jordan before you'd enjoy The Last Dance. Although apparently it's fun to watch the liquor in his glass go up and down. I don't. Thank you, Scotty. Take care.
Thanks, Leo. Bye-bye. See you next week.
Why, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. All that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. If you're bored, come pick a fight with me. It's okay. I actually enjoy that. I enjoy a conversation back and forth amongst friends. And Sue's points were well taken. I'm trying to save people who haven't yet committed to Windows. It's what I'm trying to do. People who haven't. Because it's just, you think, well, that's what everybody uses, so it must be okay. It's not. Ooh. I get chills just looking at it. Knowing the horrors that lurk under the hood. 8888-ASK-LEO. So, don't feel like you have to agree with me by any means. We also have a great website, techguylabs.com. That's free. There's no sign up. And you can always leave comments there. If you're shaking with anger, you don't trust yourself not to throw a punch at me, then just do it on the website, techguylabs.com. You know, I have noticed we're all a little tense these days. Wonder why? A little tense. There's no reason. Let's relax. Enjoy the ride. At least we're still riding. Joey in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joey.
Hey, what's up, handsome?
Oh, not much. What's up with you, good looking? How you doing?
Hey, Leo, I want to say something too, man, right quick, and then I'll get to my question.
Sure.
I just love your recommendations, man. I mean, you usually write on or
thank you.
Very close, you know, I mean.
Well, everybody, I use everything I talk about. Because I'm like I just such a geek. I can't, I try everything. So at least they're coming, recommendations are coming from my experience. But I don't expect everybody to agree with me. I'm just telling you what I think. That's all. But if it's like when you find a movie critic who's got the same taste you do, then you can listen to them and say, yeah, if they like it, I'm going to like it. It's like that. So I'm glad you found somebody who shares your taste.
Man, too much. It's crazy.
We're all in this together, boy. I tell you. Oh, man.
You remember the Obi High?
Oh, yeah. Another thing I loved and recommended.
I've got one now. I was just wondering, maybe somebody in your chat room. Leo, I mean, when I call somebody, I hear them great. But it's like they don't pick up my signal. I mean, they say they can't hear me.
Oh, that's interesting. Are you just dim? Can they kind of hear you?
They can kind of hear me. It's like I'm breaking up, and then they can't make out what I'm trying to say to them.
What are you using for a phone?
I've got I don't have a corded phone. I just got one of those 9 buttons that you get from the, you buy it at the store.
Yeah. That's the first thing I'd look at. And maybe you can find a corded phone that you could plug into the Obi High. First thing I'd look at is just the device you're talking on, right?
Okay.
That's always easiest to troubleshoot the stuff you can simply swap out. Oh, let me explain for people who don't know what this is. The Obi High, and it's now available at obitalk.com. The idea was you could get a free Google Voice account. And the Obi High was a device that you would put on the internet that would log into that Google Voice account. Google Voice had outbound calls as well as inbound calls, and you'd have a number. I loved Google Voice. Free service from Google. It's still around, but I don't know how serious they are about it anymore, as usual with Google.
Well, they've been, and that's been an issue for about 10 years. Yeah. You never know when they're going to
go. Their attention fades, right? Oh, look at that. Something else shiny over there. So, but the idea was this Obi High, you plug it into the internet, set it up with your Google Voice account, and then plug any normal phone into it. And suddenly it's your phone. It rings when somebody calls that number. You pick it up and you can talk to them. You can dial numbers on the phone and it dials it out. So it was this great way to get home phone service basically for free over the internet. And it worked quite well for a long time. There was a brief period. It sounds like you've been using it for a while, Joey. So there was a brief period when Google changed how it worked, and then the Obi High didn't work. But I guess I gather it's working again with Google Voice, which is nice.
Which is funny because I kind of got away from it for a while, and I just went back to it about a year ago. So
yeah, you missed that. You missed that period.
I sure did.
It could be the Obi High itself. Just to finish the troubleshooting. So the first thing to do is swap out the phone, just to see if it's a phone. If it's not the phone, it could be the Obi High device itself. And is this the one you got way back when?
No, I just got this about 8 months ago.
Okay, yeah, because they've really changed the hardware.
Yeah. This is a kind of a nice one.
Yeah, I think they're gotten much nicer. So it could be, I don't think it's your internet. Because if you can hear them, they should be able to hear you. I mean, you're going upstream, they're going downstream. So maybe if your internet were, sometimes internet companies will sell you 10 megabits per second down and you'll get 128 kilobits up. You get a terrible upstream. So
I think that might be a problem, Leo.
If your upstream's really bad, that could be an issue. The other thing is the Obi High wants to be closest to the internet, so it likes to be out, not inside the router, but outside, if you know what I mean, in between the internet and the router. And that's sometimes hard to configure. Nowadays, it's challenging because, but it doesn't want to have the router interfere with it. It could be that's also a problem. So those are all hard to troubleshoot. That's why I said try changing the phone first.
Sure. You think if you go into the wall directly?
If you read the Obi High instructions, they prefer that. Because then they can you put the router into the Obi High, it'll pass it through. They may make router, somebody's saying they make router Obi High connections. That'd be the best way to do it is to use their router. I don't, anyway, that's all of that is speculation. I haven't used my Obi High in a long time. It's somewhere in the bottom of a closet. What else can I do for you, Joey?
I got one more thing I want to hit you with, and this is, I've been meaning to ask you this for about 2 years, and I always forget. I want to hit you with some politics, Leo. Okay, so here.
Why do you think I do a tech show? I used to do a regular talk show. I go home with a stomach ache every night.
I ain't mad at it, man. Have you seen Nancy Pelosi? Lord have mercy. Hey, here's the deal, Leo. Have you ever thought about why they won't vote online?
Oh, I spent a lot of time thinking about that.
So many problems. I mean, I understand, Leo, there is a security thing that they got to figure out. But why don't you just totally walk away from it? I mean, it's like not even a consideration, you know?
In fact, you're not alone. There are a lot of people, especially in this age of COVID, who are saying, you know, first of all, you gotta decide, do you want to make voting as widely available as possible, or do you not? And there are differing points of view on this. There are some in our political establishment who only want some people to vote. They don't want everybody to vote, right?
Hey, just say Republicans don't want minorities to vote.
Okay. You said it, but it's probably true. So there's this, you know, there's, so that's one issue, right? And there's a lot of, and they usually catch that in terms of security. Like, oh, you don't want voter fraud. There's very little voter fraud. It hasn't been.
They run away with that, don't they? They run away with that.
That's not the issue. That's just the straw man that they use. So there are some groups that want to make voting be, you know, you have to be really hardcore, serious, you know, political. And then there are other groups, which I think I think you're in the camp of, and I'm in the camp of, that think everybody should vote. That's a part of your citizenship. In fact, I'm not against the idea, which some countries have, of requiring voting. Everybody should vote.
And you see where they're trying to go now. They won't go to the internet, but they're saying, well, we want to increase mail-in ballots.
Well, and there's a battle over that, too. The president doesn't think mail-in's secure at all, which is crazy because that's how he votes. But, okay, that's another matter entirely. You got me political. But I do want to talk about online voting because there's a technical issue in this. Anybody who's paid attention to voting understands there's one critical factor. You need a paper trail. And that's the problem with pure electronic voting. Whether it's on the internet or even at a voting booth, if there isn't a paper trail, then it can be modified. What you want to get when you go to vote, Joey, is a receipt. If you're using an electronic machine, if you're using a paper ballot, you don't need it because you have the paper, you know. But if you vote on a machine, you want a receipt to come out of that that says, Joey, this is the vote we recorded. And you can look at that and say, yep, that's how I voted. Otherwise, it's...
Is that in an email?
Yeah, but that could be hacked too. And so this is your problem, is verification. There are a lot of groups trying to promote electronic voting. Every security expert I know says that is just too dangerous. And I agree. We want to balance we want to make it as easy to vote as possible, right? Ideally, you should be able to vote in your smartphone. And there are lots of people trying to figure out how we can do that. The problem is, without a paper trail, you have no way of knowing your vote was properly recorded or counted. And there have been times, in fact, that you don't even have to go back too far in history.
I don't know that anyway.
Remember the Iowa caucus? They tried to do cell phone reporting, and they ended up throwing all the electronic reporting out and going back to the paper ballots. They had a paper trail, so they were able to count those votes. And unfortunately... If you're a security expert, you know of the thousands of ways online voting can be hacked. And without a paper trail, there's no way to validate that Joey's vote got recorded as Joey intended it. And that's so vital to the whole process. So I don't think we're close to this.
Machine. Is there a paper trail there?
Well, there isn't a good one. Yes, there isn't a good one. But there are a lot of voting machines in use all over the country. This is... You know, one of the reasons our voting system is more robust than you think is because there's every different jurisdiction has a different way of doing it. But there are some used in some areas of the country, not in San Diego, but there are some used in some areas of the country that don't do, they are electronic entirely. You push a button and there's no paper receipt. Sure. And that is a problem. Those are very dangerous machines. We know they can be hacked easily. So even those machines with a physical presence at a ballot, you know, at a voting place, a polling place, even those machines are vulnerable. That's why I think internet voting, we got a long way to go before we can do that.
What about this idea that we vote online, we print it out, and we mail it in to them, and we keep a copy?
That's okay.
Something to that.
That's okay. I have no problem with that.
There's a way to do it. I mean, come on now.
Well, we're going to work on it. We're going to work on it. And I'll tell you what, I'll put some links in the show notes because there are a lot of groups trying very hard to figure this out. But you always want to look to the security gurus because those are the guys who'll tell you. They're the ones who have the mentality. They think about how hackers work. They're the ones who'll tell you if it's safe or not. And yeah.
I'm the first one to say security is a problem.
It's important.
But I don't think we should walk away from it just because of that.
No, I'm with you. It should be as easy to vote. Anybody who wants to vote should be able to vote. I completely agree with you. It should be as easy to vote as possible. But right now, internet voting is challenging to say the least. I'm with you though. We don't want to make it harder. We will make it easier.
Sure.
All right. Hey Joey, good question.
Thank you, sir. You have
good
a great
question.
Day.
Thank you for calling. Yeah, any voting system that's going to be reliable, as the voter, you need a paper trail. So you need to be able to say, yep, it recorded it properly. And the voting officials have to have a paper trail fallback. If for any reason they think this account doesn't look right, something's going on here. But we've seen machines. They used to, at the hacker conferences, which I don't think will happen again for a while, they used to have Voting Village, where they'd put a lot of voting machines that are used currently in the United States in there, and they'd let hackers go at them. And it was so easy. It was way too easy. These hackers would be, you enter a vote, you look on the screen, it says, I voted for Walter Mondale, and it spits out, he voted for Ronald Reagan. I mean, these things are, any computer's hackable with enough zeal, and what would be more desirable than hacking an election, right? So it's really important that these be secure, and every expert I've ever talked to about this says, you got to have a paper trail. And that's what's wrong with internet voting. There is no paper trail. 8888, ask Leo. That's our phone number if you want to talk. You know what? This is good. You guys are getting feisty. Let's get feisty. I'd love the chance to defend my opinions, and I even change my mind if you, by accident, happen to be right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today, our podcast today, brought to you by The Fox. I love The Fox. I'm talking Mint Mobile here. Oh, man. Mint Mobile. You know what? Thank you, Mint Mobile, because they've been very good during this crisis. Now they're extending. They extended it to May 14th. Unlimited data free if you're a Mint Mobile customer, new or existing. Unlimited data. So I'm going to talk about the data limits, but remember that during this crisis, Mint Mobile has been removing those caps. You can find out more at mintmobile.com/unlimited. I'm getting the new iPhone SE. I can't wait. I'm going to put the Mint Mobile SIM in it. When I want to save money, there is no better carrier than Mint Mobile. The same exact premium service I get from, well, T-Mobile in this case, but I'm getting it for a fraction of the cost. Because you know why? Mint Mobile doesn't have the stores. They don't have the marketing budget. They don't have they use T-Mobile's towers, so they don't have to build those. They eliminate the hidden fees, and you save the same premium network coverage you used to at a fraction of the cost. Because everything is online. Mint Mobile. Let me give you an example. So there is a introductory rate, which I love, 3-month introductory plan, $15 a month. Okay, what are you paying a month for your cell service right now? $15? No, right? That gives you, for $15, unlimited text, nationwide, unlimited nationwide talk. You also get 3 gigabytes of data, although right now it's unlimited. So unlimited data, at least for the next month, $15 a month. That's their 3-month introductory plan. They'll ship you the SIM. You can buy a phone from them, or more likely, you can bring your existing phone. And if you go to the website, they'll tell you if it'll work. Any GSM phone will work. But as soon as I did that for a little while, I said, this is so great. I want more data. So I ended up buying the $300 plan a year. So for $25 a month, I get unlimited talk and text nationwide, 12 gigabytes of data, 12 gigabytes of data a month. I've never run out of data. You can pay for more if you need it, but for $25 a month, that is the best deal in mobile. Ditch your wireless bill. Start saving with Mint Mobile. Go to mintmobile.com/techguy. And it's if you're buying a new iPhone SE, perfect marriage, right? Get the unlocked version. Get it from Mint Mobile, the coverage from Mint Mobile. They'll mail you the SIM for free, and you're good to go. Mint, you can even bring your own phone number over. Absolutely. mintmobile.com/techguy. mintmobile.com/techguy. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month with that three-month introductory plan. And honestly, I loved it so much, I was just moving all my phones over there bit by bit. mintmobile.com/techguy. Oh, by the way, we thank Mint Mobile for supporting this little old podcast network, keeping us on the air during the quarantine crisis. Thank you, Mint Mobile. And we thank you for supporting us by going to mintmobile.com/techguy. And if you want to take advantage or at least find out about the unlimited offer, go to mintmobile.com/unlimited. That's also cool. They're cool. Ryan Reynolds owns them. Of course they're cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88. Ask Leo. I just want to jump. Jerry Hatfield, Pennsylvania. Welcome.
Hang on, Leo. I'm getting 3 feet away from my phone. I hope you do the same.
We will have social distancing phone calls.
Leo, on your advisement, I got the ExpressVPN.
Yeah.
Okay. And then on my computer, not a problem. Then it says I'll do it on my smartphone. So I try to download it, but it says I don't have enough memory.
Oh, no. That's the worst.
So I go into my apps, and I have a whole bunch of Google stuff in there I never wanted. I never asked for, but yeah. I can't get rid of it.
It's an Android phone, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, all Android phones come with a host of fine Google programs, and yeah, you can't really get rid of them. So I want to get.
Sure.
So we typically use different words for disk storage and RAM. Normally when you say memory, I think it's RAM. So is it saying you don't have enough RAM, or is it saying you don't have enough disk storage?
Enough disk storage.
Okay. How big is your phone?
16 gigs.
Oh, there you go. Bingo. They really shouldn't sell 16 gigabyte phones anymore.
Well, mine's about 8 years old.
Yeah. In those days, in the good old days, you didn't have music, movies, pictures, apps.
Right.
You were much more limited. But nowadays, most companies start at 64 gigs, and I think that's 64 is most enough for most people, but 16 is a little tough, the operating system alone. So how much free space do you have in your phone? Do you know?
Not very much. That's why I put a SIM card in there, too.
A SIM's not going to – it doesn't have much. Oh, you put an SD card.
SD card, right. Yeah.
The problem with Android is there's not a lot. You can only move data to the SD card. You can't move the apps there. So, good. If you add an SD card, that'll help. Move all your photos over there, any music, any documents, any data. Just move that all over there.
My question to you, Leo, is that if I don't have any more memory left on the internal memory of my smartphone,
right,
and they try to put something else on me, without a sufficient memory for it to hold, can they knock some of my apps out that
no.
I put their crap in?
No. No. Yeah. You really don't like the Goog, do you?
Well, I don't mind it, but I never asked for it, you know?
No, I know, but it's just the way it is with Android phones. In fact, there are manufacturers that sell Android phones without the Google stuff, and people complain bitterly about that. I would just look at whatever apps you can delete, whatever data you can move, and good luck, because you don't have a lot of storage. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett, our travel guru, joins us every week to help us travel like a rock star. Johnny, maybe you need a new a new gig for maybe like it'd be like it'd be quarantined like a rock star.
Yeah, because I'm not traveling anytime soon.
No, nobody is. That, you know what? That's for me and for my wife the biggest hardship of this. We're lucky because we, you know, we still can make a living and all that. But and right. So I know others have some real hardships. But for us, we get, you know, we see our travel pictures and we go, oh, when are we going to when do you think we're going to be able to do that again?
Yeah, it's going to be a while. I mean, until there's a vaccine, I think the Delta CEO this week came out and said it's going to be about 3 years until they get back to normal or what they say is normal. But there's going to be all these different precautions. It's interesting to see what's going on right now. I mean, an Italian firm just came out with some crazy concept, like an S shaped for coach. So if it's 3 and 3, the middle seat will be reversed.
Pictures of plexiglass hoods all over. But you know, I think there is a solution. And I'm going to credit a guy named Paul Buchheit, who created Gmail and later created one of my very favorite social networks, which died, unfortunately, called FriendFeed. Paul wrote in his blog, he said, what we need is fast testing. If the airlines could test everybody who got on board, and they're starting to do this with some airlines now, and within 5 minutes have the result, you could travel.
So that is a future.
I think that might be in the future.
We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
I mean, Emirates, Etihad, some of the Middle Eastern airlines, they're doing some kind of rapid testing.
I would do that. Then I would feel safe cruising. I'd feel safe flying. You know, there are privacy concerns. These tests that Paul is talking about use saliva, so you could have a little kiosk. You go, you either do a cheek swab or you spit, and they can test it within 10 minutes. You'll have the results. So you arrive at the airport 10 minutes early, spit in the tube, sit in the late waiting room, and if you're clear, you get on the plane.
And I think that will be the future of cruising, too. Before you get on the cruise ship, and when you get off every country, and when you get back on, it's the only way they're going to allow people into their countries, I think.
Right.
It's going to be interesting. United Airlines this week told their flight attendants they have to wear masks. Passengers on Air Canada have to wear masks on the flights. I think that's going to be the future. The flight attendant union, one of the major flight attendant unions this week, also said that they want to stop leisure travel because
Who's traveling for leisure? I saw Hawaii has, I think, something like 109 people have flown to the islands in the last 3 weeks. And something like 15 were tourists. They make you quarantine for 14 days if you arrive in Hawaii for whatever reason. And
they do.
And if it turns out you go to the beach and you set up a towel and an umbrella, they put you on a plane home right away. And I understand that.
Yeah, they just set up a fund, which it makes no sense to me. But Hawaii set up a fund for like $25,000 to put towards sending a tourist back right away.
Yeah, don't go to Hawaii right now. There's no leisure travel.
They don't want you there.
Yeah.
You're not welcome. They're cracking down. The way people were getting around it were renting houses. But now they're really starting to find those places. They will fine you. I think it's $5,000, and you could go to jail for up to a year. But, this is not the time to be traveling. Although I just looked today. There's actually a really good handle to follow on Twitter. TSA Media _ Lisa F. She's the one who runs the TSA. And every day she tweets how many people have gone through the checkpoint, what it was the year before. So today she just tweeted 6 hours ago that yesterday, April 24th, 123,000 travelers went through the TSA checkpoints nationwide. And keep in mind, this is also workers and crew. But exactly 1 year earlier, it was 2.5 million.
My concern is that these companies – are they going to be all right if they don't? Delta says 2 or 3 years. What are they going to do?
Until they get back. The airlines are going to be much smaller than they are now. It's going to be scary for the next year or two, depending on, like Southwest yesterday or 2 days ago, the CEO said they're going to be a much smaller airline. United's already told people that after, I think, October 1st, they're going to start laying off a lot of people because that's when the government money runs out.
So smaller mean fewer flights?
Fewer flights, fewer routes, fewer employees.
So probably it's going to be harder to get around and it's going to be more expensive, I would think, to get around.
I believe, and this is my just opinion, that short term it's going to be cheap. Long term it's going to be expensive. So
it's going to be a real luxury to be able to travel.
I think so, because there's going to be that many airlines not flying. I mean, so many planes are parked right now. Virgin Australia just filed bankruptcy. They're not done, but they filed bankruptcy, and some of their planes are being at Perth Airport yesterday or 2 days ago, they put a bulldozer in front of one of the planes so they can't take off.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they owe so much money to the airport.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, don't forget, it costs the airline to fly into the airport, too.
Yeah, I think they owed $6 million to the Perth airport.
What about the budget airlines, Ryanair and Spirit? What's Norwegian? What's going to happen to them?
This week also, Norwegian's complicated because they have multiple, they set up their company in multiple countries, but two of the three countries they set up in, they filed bankruptcy this week. So two thirds of the company has been laid off.
If I read it correctly. Terrible.
But right now I was reading an article. They're saying that Wizz Air, which is I think it's an Eastern European airline. They're flying more routes than the major carriers. And in the U.S., Southwest is flying more than, you know, the major carriers here, Delta, American, United. Hmm. So things are changing. So I'm trying to figure out ways to, you know, stay at home. I created a YouTube channel.
Tell me about your YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube.com and you search for Johnny Jet, his new YouTube channel is up there, and you're doing something fun. I'm going to do this with you. You're doing 39 questions. 39.
Yep.
So, like, what do you ask? What are the questions?
I mean, I ask people, like, how many countries they've been to, what's your earliest travel memory, what's your best travel tip.
I saw your checklist of cities that you've been to. So do I have to do some homework for this interview?
Not at all. Not at all. Okay.
I couldn't off the top of my head tell you how many countries.
Have you sat next to any celebrities, I'll ask you, and what were they like?
I've never even sat next to Johnny Jett.
I'm sure you sat next to many celebrities.
Never.
I used to fly New York, L.A. every other week. I've sat next to almost every celebrity.
Really?
Or at least close to them.
I remember seeing Duran Duran get on in the plane once, but that's it. But I wasn't sitting next to him. They were up front. I was in the back. I mean, I can't think of any celebrities I've sat. I mean, I might be a very boring interview. You should reconsider.
I doubt it. My first interview was Josh Gates. He has a show on Discovery right now. He's a great guy.
Fun. He's the celebrity. He should just say, I don't sit next to celebrities. I am the celebrity.
No, he told me the celebrities he sat next to, like Jason Bateman, people like that.
Oh, that'd be fun.
He's a great guy, great interviewer. I have Samantha Brown coming up, Andrew McCarthy, some big ones.
So you're talking to travel gurus.
I am. Big time travelers. I just did one of my buddies,
this
Lee.
This is what I need.
In every country in the world.
This is what I need because I am not traveling. I won't be traveling in the foreseeable future. I love to travel. I miss travel. And so just, you know, reading about it, talking about it, thinking about it, that's all I can do. But that's...
I do have a cool webcam for you, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Webcamsydney.com.
Oh,
and I created a post on 9 travel webcams to take you away. And right now it's only 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning in Sydney, so it's going to be dark. But when it's light out, it's beautiful. Even at night, it's beautiful. I mean, Sydney is one of my favorite.
Oh, the Sydney Harbor is so gorgeous. And you know, the lights are starting to come up right now in Sydney. That is a beautiful sight. Yeah, they do the fireworks there on the on New Year's Eve.
On New Year's Eve, although they canceled them this year. I know. Was it this year? They canceled their Australia Day fireworks,
New Year's Eve. It is Anzac Day, though, so happy Anzac Day. Thank you, Johnny Jet. Leo Laporte.
Thank you.
The tech guy. Go to johnnyjet.com. That's fun. I like that one, Johnny. I love that. What a beautiful view. Oh, man, I'm just going to leave that on my screen all day.
It's live. You can see the cars going over the...
Yeah. We tried to go over the Sydney Harbor Bridge because you can walk on it. But our son at the time was just one week too young. So we couldn't do it. But next time
you mean to do the bridge climb?
Yeah.
You climb over it.
Yeah, they put overalls on you and you go up in the cable. And
I have a fear of heights, and I was supposed to do it, and I was like, I do have to do it, and that's one on my bucket list, but it's high. Once you're up there, it's high. Even walking across a bridge, period, just walking across, you know, where they're driving across.
Yeah, it's
is
so beautiful.
Cool. It's scary.
It's funny because this is – oh, there's the Opera House. There it is. Yeah, there it is. So this is on that side of that. Yeah, our cruise ship parked right there, right on the pier there. It was a beautiful location.
Yep, Circular Quay. That's where they all park. It's one of my favorite – it's one of the most beautiful cities.
I love Sydney. I love Australia. I do.
I do too. And yeah. And Australia's talking about not opening up for a while.
We'll see if that's. I mean, I think what everybody is probably saying or thinking is, we'll see. We'll see.
No one knows.
No one knows. You're going to let the virus tell you. But I have a feeling it might be a long time until we get kind of widespread testing. I love this idea, though. If you could get testing easy to do, and I am going to do this. I got offered I've been doing a study with my Aura ring with the University of California, San Francisco. And they said, in a couple of weeks, we're going to send you an invitation to do an antibody test through the UCSF. And I said, good. I want to see. Because maybe, I don't think I've had it. But if I had, anybody who's had it, you get that golden ticket. And then you can go anywhere. Take advantage of all this. You could travel with impunity.
Well, they're saying WHO came out this morning saying that even if you had the coronavirus, it doesn't mean that you're immune.
Yeah, we don't know yet.
That's what they said today.
Right.
And I'm like, what?
Are they saying you're definitely not immune, or we don't know if you're immune?
They're saying they're not. You're not.
Yeah, because there are some viruses that having had it doesn't make you immune from it.
You know, you just don't know what to believe these days.
What did Dr. Mom, what did they say? Did they say that we aren't sure yet or that you really aren't? We know. I knew we weren't sure. There's no evidence of immunity at all. Huh? Oh. That would be a bummer.
Yeah.
That would be a bummer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo as we talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that stuff. Pete, Clinton Township, Michigan. Hello, Pete.
Leo, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Flock of Seagulls. Love them.
Flock of Seagulls. That's the band. Wow, you're good. You are good, Pete.
You gave me my mom's spaghetti sauce. I don't know if you remember that at all.
Oh, man, I love your mom's spaghetti sauce, Pete.
Yeah. Okay, hey, that's good. Okay.
We Italians, we got to stick together.
That's correct.
That's right.
We do. Okay, I have a question for you. Scott Wilkinson was on before,
yep.
And I got a funny story about him. I have a TV that doesn't turn on. I have to turn on by hand. It's an Insignia 55-inch TV.
That's just exhausting just thinking about it. You mean you want to turn it on? You have to get up out of the seat, walk over to the TV, push a button.
Well, no, walk over, go behind my TV because it kind of wedged in there.
How do you change the channel?
They're not working on the clicker.
Oh, okay. Because I think you and I are both old enough to remember the days when your dad would say, get up and change the channel, Leo.
That's correct.
We were the remote controls, Pete. We were.
Yes, we were, Leo. Oh, my God. So, hey, I'm looking for a good quality 55-inch TV that doesn't break the bank.
Scott would tell you TCL is definitely one to look at.
Okay.
They're a Chinese company. TCL, Hisense. And there's one other, and their name is so silly, I can't remember it. But you won't find that so readily. But TCL and Hisense are everywhere. They're inexpensive, and because they're trying to break into the U.S. market, the prices are very good. So they're kind of where Vizio used to be for a long time, kind of a second-tier manufacturer trying to, you know, be aggressively pricing. And decent TVs. I've bought my mom now two TCLs. One of the things I like with a TCL is it has a Roku in it, built into it. So they don't try to do their own smart TV. They just license Roku. And that's, to me, a lot better. So that's what I would look at for sure. And that shouldn't set you back more than a few hundred bucks.
Wow. Okay, great. Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad to recommend it.
I was told about Scott Wilkinson. My wife is a nurse. And she has a surgeon that works at him at the hospital. His name is Scott Wilkinson.
Oh.
So she turned him on to Scott. So hopefully he'll be checking out Scott's podcast.
Does he have a big bushy white beard and laugh like Santa?
Oh,
he's somebody else then.
I gotcha. Well, thank you, Leo. Thank you.
Hey, Pete, bless you. Bless you. Take care. I made spaghetti sauce last night, as a matter of fact. And when you make spaghetti sauce in this time of quarantine, you make a lot, don't you? You make a big pot. You freeze it. Freeze half of it. That way we got spaghetti for a long, long time. I'm not alone. I guess I'm looking at CNET. They did reviews the best 55-inch TV for the money, period. TCL. They did like the LG OLED. That's the best one, but not for the money. Oh, yeah. Well, that's almost $2,000 for 55-inch. That's a lot more than the TCL. So for the money, you know, if you want to save money, and it's a good TV. It's a good, don't let anybody say, hey, your TV is second best. It's a good TV. Now, they're quoting for a 65, $749. I think it's less than that. I think that's the list price. Let's look at a 55 here. See if I can find a 55. I don't see a 55. I know they have a 55. There it is, $499. That's list. So if a TCL 55-inch 4K UHD QLED with the Roku HDR 6 series lists for $500, you probably can find it for $300 if you shop around. We got Joe on the line from Wichita. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I hear you great, Joe. What's up?
I want to talk about security vulnerabilities. And I have a concern in this area.
Okie doke.
I'm wondering what you thought of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm a security analyst myself, been one for 20 years, and I'm security certified. And I'm perfectly aware of all the types of vulnerabilities you were mentioning earlier, and that there are, in software I'm talking about, custom software.
Mm-hmm.
And there are vulnerability scanners out there. I think TrustWave has one.
Mm-hmm. Quite a few, yeah.
Scanning, you know, source code scanning, or the type of scanning where they input data into the browser.
Right.
And detect the output, see if there's any vulnerabilities. I've been through all that for years and years. But here's the problem. And I've had this question come to me from companies in Europe, and in Canada, in South America. What if you have an internal person that decides to code something malicious in your software?
A backdoor.
Scanner's not going to...
No, it's not.
Backdoor?
No automated solution is going to catch everything. It's only going to catch a few things. And I'll tell you what, right. As you probably know, people like the Google zero-day guys... They spend a lot of time thinking about it. They spend a lot of time looking at code using their minds. There's no automated scanner that'll find everything. And then, you know, they'll use fuzzers. You're probably aware of those.
Fuzzy testing, yeah, sure.
They'll do all kinds. They'll do monkey testing where they throw, infinite number of inputs at stuff, but nothing finds everything. Right. If it did, we wouldn't have any problems.
Right.
Right?
So Verizon has come out with the DBIR. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Data Breach Investigation Report.
Yes.
And they've reported, and they do this anonymously, right? And this drives the industry in a way because you look at what hacks are happening the most. They come up with the mitigation techniques for those hacks, right?
Probably something you subscribe to as part of your work, I would guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, for my work, the security is driven by the customer says how much security they want.
Yeah.
If you had a warehouse with $500,000 right. worth of, you wouldn't buy $1 million system.
Exactly.
So the customer, it depends on what data they have. Do
right.
they have credit cards? Do they have bank
right.
accounts?
Right.
And they define how important that data is. You don't.
That's right.
So they will tell you how much security they want in the system. So, but one thing Verizon has pointed out is that more than half the attacks are internal.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's easy. We focus on outside attacks, stranger danger with kids, right? When we know that, for instance, in this case, most of the yeah. abuse happens from relatives, people they yeah. know. And it's the same thing with attacks. Yeah. Sometimes security researchers call it the evil maid problem. If somebody has physical access to your machine... they can do almost anything. They can attach a keystroke logger. So if they're writing your source code, if they're writing your software, if they're in your source code, there's nothing they can't do. So these are major problems. You nailed it. And I think you kind of said something very interesting. Companies will only spend what is economically feasible for them for security, which may not be enough. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think that's a point, and I ignore it. We ignore it. Probably Steve Gibson ignores it, although we're aware of it. We assume that there's a company could have achieved perfect security, but most companies is not economically sensible.
Well, there's an answer to this, okay? And here's where I'm going to go with this virus we're having and Trump.
Oh, interesting.
The answer to this is a source control system.
Yes.
That enforces integrity.
Yes.
So that means that you can enforce that the software that you've written.
That's right.
That you've reviewed, there's been a reviewer.
That's right.
Makes it to the customer.
That's right.
Nothing's marked up in between.
And this exists in the open source world. You have hashes to verify and software signed
integrity.
By the...
Hashes verify integrity.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
But still, developers can get in there and change code. You want to put a stop to that.
That's right.
Okay, but I know, and I'm an auditor, too, okay... Companies don't always put a lot of money into this. They're not foolproof. And it's happened where a malicious person, insider, has gotten in and put backdoors in that code, okay? And it's made it out to the customer. And it would make it out to more than one customer. It would make it out to every customer that takes that code.
We've seen this happen, too. Yeah, we've seen this happen with downloads. You know, if you can intercept downloads for known good software and replace it with the same software with a backdoor, and no one's the wiser. We've seen this happen many times.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this has happened to the Department of Defense, okay? And there was a whistleblower, okay? And here's what happened. It was an American company with 90% of their workforce offshore, non-citizens.
Uh-huh.
And they were sitting in Moscow.
not the first place I'd seek for software developers.
And if you think I'm fooling with you.
No, I believe you 100%.
It's already been adjudicated. It's on the internet. What happened here, and I don't know if this always happens, there's a civil case and then there's a criminal case.
Right.
Okay, for the same thing. The civil one is public, okay? So you can log on the internet and see it. There it is. Company got fined $30 million. Whistleblower gets $9 million. Here's what they did. The criminal one, you know, the FBI is not going to release that so easily. So this has already happened. So my point is this. I've been in security field for 20 years. I've watched us go from 90% citizens, 10% green card applicants, not green card people, to the opposite. Then it started going 10% citizens, 90% green card applicants.
Right.
And then it got worse after that. They said, hey, we can do it even cheaper if we offshore.
Right.
I'm saying I have our own employees work in another country, not citizens. So my point, like Trump says, we shouldn't allow citizens to come in the country. First off, I have a problem here. I think we should hire citizens first.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think citizens are any safer.
I think, no.
Was Edward Snowden a citizen? Is Chelsea Manning a citizen?
Percentage-wise, I think they were.
Well, this is the point. I don't think that's a cure for it, because I think you can have untrustworthy people whether they have a citizenship or not. Somebody being a citizen of the United States doesn't make them trustworthy or a patriot. Admittedly, you know, if you're getting your coding done in Belarus or Ukraine or China, they're not patriotic. They're not. So you still have, but I guess my point would be eliminating offshore coding is not going to fix the problem any more than, you know, it was fixed when it was only citizens. You got to have audits. You got to have security in place. You just have to. Doesn't matter. I think you're fixing the wrong problem by saying, well, only the programmers have to be U.S. citizens. That's not going to make it secure. It's not. We didn't suddenly have security flaws because non-U.S. citizens were writing our code. First of all, it's not practical, to be honest with you. Most companies are hiring H-1B visa programmers because we can't get enough programmers in the U.S. But assuming you could, would it make it safer? No. That's absurd. A citizen is not less of a security risk. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, computer security. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We were talking about security before the break. I don't agree with the fundamental premise that, well, somebody's not American, so you can't trust their code. But it does raise an important issue, which is there is a lot of trust involved with computing. I mean, civilization is a matter of trust, isn't it? And we drive down the street, we trust the person coming the other way is going to stay in their lane. And I don't think it matters what citizenship they have. We have to trust them. And computer software and everything we do these days is running computer software. Well, you can't really see into it. You got to trust it. One of the reasons I'm a fan of open source software, especially for security related functions like encryption, is because you don't have to believe. You can examine. You can look at the source code, and talented people can look at the source code and audit it, and with care, find problems and eliminate them. What you're especially looking for is intentional problems, backdoors. And of course, people are very clever. So, you know, a bad guy can introduce code that doesn't look bad. That's why we have security professionals looking for code. And that's why automation is never going to solve the problem. But I don't think requiring U.S. citizenship is going to solve it either. There's a lot of insecure code written by American citizens. A lot of it. It doesn't respect national borders particularly. But trust is an interesting question, though. Do you say, I don't trust somebody because he's from another country? Boy, I'd hate to see that. It's been my experience, and one of the reasons I love to travel is that people are the same world over. Some are trustworthy, some are not. It doesn't really matter what country they come from. Some are trustworthy, some are not. And probably the best advice when it comes to software security is it Ronald Reagan, the old trust but verify? I think he was the one who said trust but verify. It's an old Russian proverb, actually, appropriately. And it's pretty appropriate with software. You got to trust the guy writing it, but then verify. Make sure it does what it says it's going to do, no more, no less. And there are ways to do that, but it's expensive. And I think really that's the bottom line of this, is there are a lot of companies that aren't going to spend the money they need to spend. Zoom is a really good example. We've all been using Zoom video conferencing. You've seen the stories about Zoom being dangerous, insecure. There are two different kinds of problems with Zoom. One, it was designed for business, not designed for end users. And it was designed with convenience in mind, not security. But those can many of those issues can be solved just using appropriate settings. So the default settings in Zoom favor convenience over security because it was to be used in business conference calls. Zoom's addressed that, and I think a lot of us have learned and we've tried to educate about what the better settings would be to use in a Zoom conference. Then there may be other issues with Zoom, security issues, flaws, security flaws. It's not particularly laden with security flaws more than any other software, but a number of people have pointed out, well, including me, Zoom is coded in China. Zoom is an American company based out of Silicon Valley, but they hire out the coding to Chinese programmers, three different companies in China. And there are problems potentially with that. Not so much that they're Chinese. I wouldn't say that's the problem. In fact, Chinese coders are excellent, well-trained, very smart, very effective. The real problem is, and I don't think any more prone to security flaws than any other coders, maybe less. And of course, yes, they're less expensive. Standard of living is different. And maybe that's why Zoom uses them. The real problem with a Chinese coder or a Russian coder is that they have authoritarian governments who are willing to come into companies and say, you will insert some back doors in here. And if you're going to hire Russian coders or Chinese coders, then it would behoove you to examine their code very carefully before shipping it. Now, I don't know if Zoom was doing that in the past, but I know they're doing it now because they've hired some very good security experts. They even said, and I think this was smart of them, they realized that with the fabulous growth they've had since the shelter-in-place orders, they went from 10 million monthly active users in December to 400 million last month. That's a big jump in users. And of course, that's why we started to see people saying, oh no, look, I've been Zoom bombed, or, you know, the Zoom isn't working or whatever. They said, no, we're going to stop developing features. That's it. And all the programmers are going to work on security. And I don't think the fact that the programmers are in China is a problem. They hired a consultant named Alex Stamos, who was very well known to the security community. He worked at Facebook, before that at Yahoo, and is well known and well respected. They also hired a company called Luda Security, run by a woman named Katie Mazuris, who is a very, very respected security researcher. Luda will now be doing bug bounties and bug testing for Zoom. All of this is really good news. This is a company that said, here, we have an opportunity. We could be the number one video conferencing company in the world if people but trusted us. So what are we going to do? We're going to make sure people can trust us. It's all about trust. And there are well-known methods in place if you're willing to spend the money. And they've got the money to do it now. There are well-known methods in place to make sure that this code, wherever it's written, China, Russia, the U.S., Minnesota, wherever, that it's trustworthy. And believe me, insecure code can be written by people of any nationality. So I think it's very simplistic to say, well, we just should only use American citizens. That does not solve the problem at all. Not at all. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. On we go with the show. Mike is in Cerritos, California. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I got a couple questions. I was trying to call in earlier when you had the travel guy on, because it kind of hit a nerve. My wife and I were going to go on a cruise to Alaska in June, and we found out yesterday it's been canceled. But the cruise line has offered us a deal. They're giving us a 120% credit towards a future cruise. But if we book another cruise before the middle of May, we get 140% credit.
Well, nice of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
But who's going to book a cruise now?
Well, the idea was, I was wondering if I should book a cruise for next summer, June of 2021, if I was going to see if that travel fella thought that if that would be a...
Well, here's the problem. Johnny's great. But he doesn't know. No one knows what the world's going to be like next summer. It might be all over. It might not be. And so, of course, the cruise company doesn't want to give you your cash back.
Yeah.
I was fortunate. We had a cruise booked with Silversea, which is owned by Royal Caribbean. But we canceled. So we had booked it for January of next year. And so we canceled well within the contractual limit to get our money back. So they didn't have an option. It's a little different for you because your cruise must have been upcoming, right?
It was going to be in the middle of June.
Soon, right? And so that's more of a problem because if you look at the contract, they're not required to give you your money back this close.
They've offered to give us our money back or 120%.
Oh, I would take cash. If they're being generous enough, there are some cruise companies apparently are not offering cash back. If they're offering you your money back, I'd take it.
Oh, okay.
I know it's tempting, but it's just a gamble, and maybe you're more of a gambler than I am. And Johnny doesn't know because no one knows. Really, the virus will tell us when it's okay to do it again. Will it be okay next summer? Well, that's a long time from now. I can tell you, I'm not booking any travel at all until we have some sense of what's going to happen. It may well be that, for instance, there's a vaccine by next summer. That's a long shot. That's probably not going to be the case. They were already testing them, but they have to have one that works, and then it's going to take a year of testing. And even then, they have to start producing it, and healthcare folks will get it first. Producing vaccines requires a lot of effort, and we don't have a huge amount of capacity. So would you be able to get a vaccine within 13 months? Maybe, but probably not. So that's out. Maybe by then, cruise lines will have an efficient way of testing everybody who gets on board. If that's the case, I'd feel safe taking a cruise, absolutely.
Well, they are offering me not only the cash back, there's an in-between offer. I can keep a 120% credit of what I paid, and I have to book within the next 2 years.
Yeah, that's probably all right. I don't know. Johnny would have an opinion, as I do, but whether it's an informed opinion, I don't know, because, well, I can tell you it's not. No one knows. We don't know what it's going to be like, right? Will that cruise line even be around next year? That's the main reason I'd take cash at this point I think the whole industry is going to have a pretty big shakeup. It's not going to go away completely. Those boats are going to be sitting somewhere. Somebody's going to take them over, but it may not be the same people. And you may not have a recourse. You may not be able to book a cruise next. You know, you might book it now, and there won't be anything to sail on. So that's why I would go for the money.
That's a good thought. I'll have to talk that over with my wife.
Yeah, it's tempting. Of course, that's why they offer it to you. And they, you know, the offer is an acknowledgement that it's a bit of a risk.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
I know a few years ago, because you recommended them, I signed up for Carbonite for backup.
Yes, sir.
And now I notice I still have a contract with them through next year. I notice you've changed sponsors, and I wondered if there's a reason. Do you not recommend Carbonite?
No, anymore? I do not recommend Carbonite. Double negative there. No problem with Carbonite. I they're good people. It's as often happens. They didn't buy any more ads, partly because their focus changed. They wanted to aim more at the business market. And you probably noticed that in the ads as time went by, that they became more and more focused towards Carbonite for business. iDrive does do a lot of business with business, but I think that they're also still interested in consumers. And I think they have one advantage over Carbonite. One of the disadvantages of Carbonite, it was flat rate pricing. You didn't buy an amount of storage. It was just unlimited. But you paid the price per computer. So they had a different model. Your account would cover one computer. No external hard drives. No second computer. iDrive's going the other way. They have a limited amount of storage, although it's big. It's 5 terabytes. But that's for you, for anything you've got. So some of this comes down to what do you think, you know, which one works better. I am not against Carbonite by any means. The change didn't happen because I said, I'm not doing your ads anymore. The change happened because Carbonite stopped advertising and that category opened up. I try to stick with one product in any given category, just not to confuse people. But yeah, nothing. If you like Carbonite, you've been happy with them, I would stay with them.
Well, I got another year on the contract. I'll decide at that time, I guess.
Yeah. I have to be diplomatic here. But this is the way it works in advertising. You know, Ford bought ads for a long time. If they stop and Chevy comes along, I'm going to do Chevy ads. I will never advertise something I don't use and believe in. So in both cases, I used Carbonite, loved it. Use iDrive. Frankly, I like it a little bit more right now for a couple of reasons.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you, Leo.
My pleasure. It's a good question. It's a fair question. Always want to be honest with you. You know, we have to have advertisers to do this, not just for me to get paid, but for Lady Laura to get paid and Kim to get paid and the lights to stay on and Premier to make their little side bet on it. And so I'm glad we have advertisers. And as the Premier salespeople will tell you, that's our syndicator, I have turned down advertisers. There are people, not a few even, that I just say, I can't do an endorsement for that. It's not a great product. I don't want to have my name on it. So if I'm doing an ad for something, it's because I use it and believe in it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm dancing. Victor in Pasadena. Hello, Victor. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, Leo, it's so great to talk to you. My big problem is I have a HP Envy 17, and it's got a 3D laptop, and it's got a 3D screen on it. It's been working. I started to put in a new Blu-ray 3D on it, and it says, oh, you need to update because it doesn't have the copy protection available.
Ugh.
So now I'm going through, well, do I get the new program? Do I update the Windows 10? I kind of understand that Windows 10 doesn't support 3D, and I'm just kind of confused whether they just stay with what I've got and play the Blu-rays I have.
How is that 3D? I mean, I remember reading about this. They don't make them anymore. This is a pretty old laptop, but the idea was it has a shutter in it, right?
Right.
And so one eye, other eye, does it look 3D?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have glasses, special glasses that go with the screen.
That's so cool. But that's a problem, isn't it? Because
yeah.
A, you got Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray folks, you know, were so burned by DVD encryption being cracked by a high school kid 6 months in that they said when they designed Blu-ray, we're never going to let this be pirated. Of course, it was immediately pirated, but they have a lot of weird copy stuff on there. I'm guessing that they don't want to support Windows 7 anymore because it's out of date. So they want you to go to Windows 10 where they can ensure that it's still secure. But then, oh, no, there's no 3D support on Windows 10.
Is so the that, program I have from Windows 7 is PowerDVD 19. And
yeah, that yeah.
supports 3D.
Yeah.
The PowerDVD 20 doesn't say anything. It supports 4K, but that doesn't help. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, pretty much because 3D died out. I would call CyberLink or send them an email and say, hey, it doesn't say anything about 3D support. Is it still there? There's no reason for them to take it out.
I was hoping not. So, okay, I'll start.
Yeah, but I don't know off the top of my head. But CyberLink's good. I mean, their stuff is good. I never did play with this. I'm kind of jealous now. You've got a piece of history right there in front of you.
Yeah, actually, I've even got like a Top Gun in 3D.
Oh, I bet that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So, do you wear 3D headphones so you get 3D sound and everything?
No. It doesn't support 3D sound.
Oh, nuts.
3D image on the plane. Okay, so, and then I have one more thing.
Hang on, because I got to take a break. Okay. But hang on. I'm not going to hang up on y'all. We'll talk in the commercial. 8888 Ask Leo. The Giz Whiz is coming up. More of your calls to Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Website is techguylabs.com. Sorry about that, Victor. I had to.
Not a break. Problem. And it's probably more for your triangulation type show. But
oh, good.
I'm an older guy. I've spent my whole career working on like these paranoia projects for the government, all sorts of crazy things I can't talk about.
Oh, really? You work for a three-letter agency?
No, for contractors that work for three-letter
agencies. Oh, interesting.
My last 6 months with JPL, who laid me off because of the coronavirus.
Now
I'm going through a sort of, maybe not really a crisis, but given all this time, I'm thinking a lot. And it's sort of like, I don't really see going forward that the incredible amount of money we've spent on these kind of programs is going to be able to be justified anymore. Given that we should have been spending on pandemic control.
Oh, yeah, we kind of blew it, didn't we? But, I got to tell you, here's the fear I have and a lot of civil libertarians have, is that the same people who wanted this kind of perfect total, they called it total information awareness, right? TIA. That's what the NSA program was. The same people don't want, they're not giving it up. They don't want to give it up. They say, and so what they're going to do, I think, is say, oh, look, here's a perfect opportunity to get something on everybody's phone that'll tell us where they are at all times.
Well, to be honest, I think that's a much more economical way to approach it.
Well, it is.
my issue is I've been working on satellites and things that cost incredible amounts of money.
Oh, I see. Yeah, we don't need satellites. I mean, we need satellites to get to see into other nations. So if you want to know if Russia's building a missile complex, how are you going to do it without a satellite, right?
I don't know if you've heard about this, but Northrop Grumman has a program. And this is out in the open, so it's nothing classified. But they have a robotic satellite that they launch for disabled satellites that have run out of fuel.
Wow.
It attaches, serves as a fuel tank, and attaches and wow. stays there for about 10 years. When it's done, it deorbits it and finds another one to help.
Nobody's going to build satellites anymore. Well, you know, economically, I think we're in a crisis. Here's the question. What's the U.S. going to look like coming out of this in a couple of years? Are we going to be a first world nation or a third world nation?
I'm really skeptical. And I know people always want to look, well, there's a good side and a bad side. I really think we're not going to get a vaccine. And this virus isn't going to be something that once you get it, you can't get it again. And I just
then we're really in trouble, right? Then we've got to just
I know we're in trouble. So going forward, my son, thank God, he's in the medical field, and I think going forward, he'll have a career. I was in aerospace back in the 80s and 90s when there was a big shakeup, and I had a career.
Yeah.
But that ain't going forward. I don't think that's going to work.
Well, are you old enough to retire now? Do you have enough pension to retire?
That's what, yes, absolutely.
Thank God, knock on wood, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Victor, though, we're of a certain age. This is what happens. The world changes underneath us, right?
Yeah.
And we become old dogs. And
ouch.
I know. Think I'm enjoying it? But that's the way it is. And I guess the best thing to do is to gain some wisdom, be gracious about it, and support our kids in becoming the next generation. Maybe they'll do a little better than we did.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, thank you for. I was hoping that maybe there might be some alternative to play 3D Blu-ray.
I don't know. I think a good question for CyberLink, though. I wouldn't. You know, why would they take it out? They may not be hyping it because nobody's making these devices anymore. Unless it was hard to maintain or there was some other issue, why would they take it out? I think it's at least a 50-50 chance it's still there. They just don't put it on the box.
Yeah, so I'll call them first before I blow away the
I would, absolutely would, yeah. And they may have some suggestions.
Okay, thank you for your time. And
great to talk to you.
Forever, and
thanks.
Way to go. One of the things I used to do is Leo wrong, and do I have a better solution?
I love that. Keep doing it. Call me anytime, okay. Victor.
Okay, bye, Leo.
We old dogs have to stick together.
Oh, dear, yeah, I guess.
Leo Laporte, let's get ready to rock. The tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. I'll tell you how old that song is. There's no synthesizer in it. 8888, Ask Leo. No auto-tune either, right? Kevin, Vancouver, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kevin, British Columbia. Welcome.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing today?
I am great. How are you? How are things in Vancouver? I love your city. Used to come up there once a month to do the TV show. Love it.
It's a beautiful sunny day up here.
Oh,
it's nice.
Spring
has arrived. And I live across from the beach, so I'm pretty lucky.
Very nice. Yeah.
So I wanted to say thanks for hiring Ant and Micah. I think with those two additions, you're firing on all cylinders. And I love the new shorts you're doing on different topics.
Thank you. I should mention for those listening to the radio show, which is almost everybody, Kevin's talking about the podcast network This Week in Tech. And we have two new hosts we brought in, young guys, because, well, we need some young blood, Ant Pruitt and Micah Sargent. And, yeah, I agree with you. They're stars. They're great. I'm glad you like their shows. That's great. Thank you, Kevin.
Great. So one of the shorts, and I really appreciate the shorts you're doing as well, but the question I have for you is this. You've spoken lots about YubiKeys, and I, you know, tend to follow your best business.
And I did do an Ask the Tech Guy, as you know. That's the little short show on these YubiKeys. I really like them, yeah.
right. No, what the difference between the YubiKey and an authenticator app like my company has issued? Which is one better than the other?
No, they're similar. So this is that multi-factor authentication I talk about all the time. Instead of just having a password, which is only one thing, to authenticate that you have that bank account or this is your email or this is your app, it's good to have two ways of doing it. And in general, when they talk about factors, there are three different factors. There's something that you know, something you hold in your brain, like a password. There's something you have, like your smartphone or a little key, like one of these YubiKeys. It's a physical key. And then there's something you are, that's biometrics, like your fingerprint or your iris scan and your face recognition. And it's nice if you can combine two of the three for login. So an authenticator is essentially something you have because you have to have it on your phone, right? It's running in the background. Every 30 seconds, it gives you a new number for every account that you've turned on two-factor. So if the only potential problem with that is if the phone got out of your control. The way these authenticator apps work is you're given a number, a secret key. Let's talk about your bank. Let's say your bank's using this. Your bank, to set up the authenticator, you've probably done this. You'll take a picture of a QR code on the screen. That really is just passing along a long secret key. It's almost like a second password, which that authenticator app then merges with the time of day to create that six-digit number. It's called a time-oriented one-time password. It's a good system, except that secret key is the weakness because it's really not tied to your phone. It is, and if somebody got your phone and got the secret key off your phone or was able to intercept the secret key, they'd be able to generate the one-time password. So that's, and it's only a potential theoretical risk. These YubiKeys, they'd have to get the physical key. They'd have to actually get the key from me. They'd have to pick my pocket or get into my house. Generally, the way YubiKeys work, and there are other, by the way, physical keys. In fact, my first one came from PayPal. It was a football-shaped little keychain dongle that had a LCD screen that would give you the six-digit number on it. YubiKeys do generate a one-time, time-based one-time password. They have some circuitry and a CPU in there to do that, but it's also got the special number that's associated with the YubiKey. And so it's a lot harder to crack. You'd have to physically, in my opinion, you'd have to physically get the YubiKey. I don't know of any other way around that. And so I have one safely stored at home. You could put it in a safety deposit box. You should always have a second one in case you lose the first one, and one on my keychain. So if a bad guy wanted to steal my bank account, there'd be two ways potentially. He could steal my phone. And if he could unlock it, of course, that's another one. If you lock your phone and you keep it secure, I think an authenticator is probably just as good as a YubiKey. So if he could unlock it and get to my authenticator or maybe intercept the secret on the way to me, then he'd have a way to get in. But he'd still need to know my password, remember? So that's why it's two is better than one. YubiKey, he'd have to pick my pocket or mug me and steal my YubiKey. So I think they're pretty close. What's worse, what you shouldn't use, and it should never even be used as a fallback, unfortunately every bank does, and you probably know this too, is SMS, text messaging. Because it's very easy for a bad guy to spoof your phone number and steal your text messages. So it's a targeted attack. They'd have to be going after you specifically. You know, they say, I want to get Kevin's bank account. Then what's Kevin's cell phone number? And then from then, they could probably spoof it. So that's why an SMS message isn't as good. But it's also better than nothing because probably most people aren't going after Leo or Kevin. We're not agents for a foreign government or anything like that.
And most banks up here do use SMS for the second.
Almost every, I've never seen a bank that doesn't. And the reason is everybody can, you know, people can figure that out. And so it's at least a fallback. Very few Google, Twitter. There are only a few companies that don't allow SMS fallback. And remember, the weakest link is, you know, that's the way guys will get in. Bad guys will get in. So you may have an authenticator or a YubiKey, but if there's a button that says I lost my YubiKey and it goes back, falls back to SMS, you're no more secure than if you were using SMS. So that's the thing to remember. Always, if you can, disable text messaging for that second factor. It's a great question. Yeah, we do have a longer Ask the Tech Guy talking more about these. I think if there's one takeaway for security, I would tell everybody listening, if you can, turn on two-factor. Even if it's SMS, it's so much better than just a password.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to do in this in the house here. Is but we're just trying to decide whether it should be, you know, like the Microsoft Authenticator app or a YubiKey.
Yeah, the disadvantage of the YubiKey is it costs money and it's a physical device and you can't lose it and blah blah blah. If I were going to use an authenticator app, I'd use Authy, A-U-T-H-Y. It's free from a company called Twilio. They're a very good company, and Authy has one advantage over Microsoft Authenticator or Google's Authenticator. You can get a new phone and automatically download all your keys. You don't have to start over.
Oh, yeah. I learned that lesson with Google. I lost the authenticators before. I never used it.
It's a pain in the butt. Mike, does Microsoft let you use your Microsoft account to store the keys? They might. If they did, then
it
that...
does. It does. I think it backs up to your iCloud.
Then that would... The OneDrive? That would be... Then I would say Microsoft just as good.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe even better, because you probably can trust Microsoft. You know who they are.
Yeah.
Hey, it's good to talk to you, Kevin.
Take care. Have a nice weekend.
Say hi to Gastown.
Yeah, you bet. Bye-bye.
Take care. It's the old part of Vancouver, my favorite part. Although, gosh, that bay and Whistler and... What a view. What a beautiful area. Dick T. Bartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer. Our GizWiz is coming up in just a minute with some crazy gizmo or gadget. And we will continue the show in just a bit. Let me remind you, the Tech Guy Labs website is open for business 24/7. You can go there. There's no sign up. There's no fee. Search. If you hear something on a show, you don't have to write it down. All the websites, everything I mentioned, including a link to YubiKey and... You know, more information, even the Ask the Tech Guy segment where I talk about two-factor authentication and third-party devices like the YubiKey. That's all going to be there, techguylabs.com. Thanks to James DeRuvo, who's writing it all down. We even put audio and video from the show after the fact there, so it's a complete collection. And I should give myself a plug, the TWiT podcasts, which if you're a serious tech nut, we do it. I mean, that's where we really go deep and deep dive into stuff like this. Security, Windows, Macintosh. That's at twit.tv, TWIT.tv. And there's lots of good stuff there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The GizWiz, right after this.
Should be dancing.
Yeah. Dick D. Bartolo, he's the dancing fool, our disco god, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for 50 years. He's also our gizmo wizard, a.k.a. the Giz Wiz. Hello, Dickie D. from Disneyland.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
I'm great.
Everything good out there?
I see you have the very coveted ABC News hot coffee wrap.
Yeah, only because they emailed me again and said, can you do your next spot on Skype? So I
they love it. They love it.
Yeah. I love it.
You know, it's so funny because we've been using Skype for most of our shows for 15 years. It's so funny to watch the network's attempt to do what we've done. I bet you they look at you and go, wow, Dick, you really look good.
Leo, it was so funny. I was talking to a New York host, but the control room was evidently in Washington because at the bottom of my screen it said Washington Bureau. And the guy said to me just before we started, he said, can you slide your chair back? And I said, yeah. Could you push your computer forward? I said, do you want me to zoom out? He said, oh, you could zoom out.
You have Zoom? What? Zoom? Oh, yeah. And of course your sound is good because you have the great professional mic and the whole works.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. So Dick collects kind of crazy stuff for our benefit. What do you got?
Well, you know what? You're a gourmet chef, right?
Well, I'm a chef. I don't know if I'm gourmet. Well, I like to cook, yes.
Okay. In Brooklyn, gourmet chef is you have a sharp knife.
Yes, I do.
And you've cut something that wasn't frozen or canned.
Yes.
Okay, you're a gourmet.
I have a knife wrap. I have beautiful knives.
Oh, my word.
Oh, yeah.
You're
ready.
A gourmet chef.
I'm ready to go to work on the
You
on the
might
line.
Be ready for
yes.
the hanging kitchen trash can with scraper. Okay.
Okay.
So this is this is a little folding trash can that hangs on the edge of a drawer.
Okay.
It takes a 3-gallon plastic bag, and the rim of this trash bin comes off. So when you put the plastic bag in there, you put it, you secure it with this plastic rim.
Yes.
Now, when you have scraps on the counter, you can take that little holder.
Oh, and you slide them in.
And you slide it over.
Oh.
If you have a lot of trash, you pull the bottom of this thing out.
Oh.
And then you have a place to throw in like 3 gallons of trash.
I have to see. I'm going to your YouTube site to see the video because it's hard to imagine how this works. You don't leave it out, though, right?
No, you know what? You can put it, you can hang it on the outside of a cabinet, and then when company's not there, just flip it around so it hangs inside
the cabinet. So you don't see it. Yeah. Perfect.
Exactly.
Perfect.
It's pretty clever. It's I paid $20, but I was looking online earlier.
But you know, this is the time, you know, when you're doing a lot of chopping and there, you know, you got carrot tops and ends and stuff, and you just want to be able to sweep it in as you're going.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I completely get that.
Yeah. And also in the back of the car for the kids, it can hang in the seat pocket.
I'd like to sweep the kids into it. Can I do that? Will they fit?
You have to get the really big one to do.
Jumbo size.
Jumbo size.
Oh, this is clever. I think this is a good thing. You have a lot of kitchen. It looks like you got a lot of knives. You have a pretty good kitchen set up there.
That happens to be Dennis's kitchen.
Oh, yeah, of course. He's the cook.
My kitchen has a fork and a peanut butter scraper.
There's a couple of computers in there. There's all sorts.
Exactly.
Well, in New York, you're lucky to have anything. This looks good. I'm looking at the video. If you want to see the video and find out where to order this thing, all you have to do is go to gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz, and you can see how this thing works. You can get the link to order it. Is it on Amazon? Is that where you got it?
It's on Amazon, yeah.
I'm kind of liking this. I might have to order this, Dickie. You got
All
another
right.
hit on your hands, sir. While you're there, by the way, there are so many fun things to do on his website. It's a great site. You can play the What the Heck Is It contest. Just about 5 days left, 6 days left for the end of the month. A close-up picture of a gizmo or a gadget. If you could figure out what that thing is, you could win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. There's 6 autographed copies for the right answer. There's 12 for the best wrong answers. Judges' decisions are final. But read up on the rules at the website, gizwiz.biz. You should also, while you're there, check out all the gifts you can get. This is, you know, I know we all have Father's Day's coming up, birthdays, prom, graduation. Who wouldn't want a Mad collectible for that special event in your life? And Dick's got them all on his website, available
and
for purchase.
Everything between now and June 15th, all the money goes to the Actives Fund.
All the money? You should keep a little.
Yeah, except shipping. No, I'm just giving all the money.
Really? Oh, Dick, you're so generous. That's really nice. Yeah, because Broadway's closed.
Oh, my gosh. Broadway, off-Broadway, and a lot of them are not coming back.
Yeah, and let me tell you, if you're a Rockette, there's nowhere you can make money kicking things. Maybe, I don't know, nowhere right now anyway.
Hopefully by the Christmas show. Well, I'm not even sure how that's going to work.
Who knows?
The Rockettes have to be 6 feet apart. They'll be out in the street.
Nobody put your arms around.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be very difficult. Well, this is why you should go to gizwiz.biz. Support Broadway, support Dick, check out all the fun things to do. It's a great website. And catch him on World News Now. Are you coming up soon? Or
The first weekend in May.
First weekend in May.
It's Bike Gadgets.
Bike Gadgets?
Bike Gadgets. It's
That's
bike,
timely.
Bike Safety Month.
Yeah, because and also I ride a lot because I got to get out of the house, right? And I figure if I keep 20 miles an hour, the germs can't catch up to me. That's my hope.
I do believe the medical industry has picked 20 miles an hour.
20 miles. They only go, a sneeze is only 18 miles an hour. So you can always outrace it if you're on a bicycle. I don't think that's true.
You do have to go through red light. So remember that.
Do not take medical advice from Dick DiBartolo or Leo Laporte. We don't know what the hell we're talking about. But I do enjoy seeing you every week, and I'm glad you're doing well. And Dennis as well. Nobody's sick. The dogs.
Yeah, we're all good. Everybody's well here. Thank you so much.
Really happy to see that.
The same out there.
Have you seen the boat in a while?
The marina is opening this coming week.
Wow. That's great.
Only for families. You cannot bring guests out, but we're just happy to go down there and have lunch. And
would you be able to take a cruise? You would. You'd be able
Yes. As long as it's just family members.
It's kind of fun. There's no traffic. I love bicycling right now. There's nobody on the streets. I bet it's really fun. Are you on the Hudson or?
Yeah, the Hudson. And we were walking Charlie the other night, and I said to Dennis, "Listen for a minute." And Dennis said, "I don't hear a thing." I said, "Yes."
When have you ever heard that in your whole life living in Manhattan?
Next to the West Side Highway for about 45 seconds, not one car went by. It was astounding.
It's amazing. Ugh. I kind of wish. Okay, this is heresy, but I kind of wish it would stay this way. I kind of like
it. Well, it's going to be a little hard for people to make a living if everybody stays in their house.
Well,
fortunately, you and I are lucky.
We just ordered takeout.
We've been doing our work in our house.
This is what we do for a living. I'd never leave the home if I didn't have to. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer, and the GizWiz, gizwiz.biz. Enjoy the great GizWiz podcast, too, with Chad Johnson. That's at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
You too. See you next week.
Take care. Thank you, Lady Laura, our musical director. Thank you to Kim Schaffer, our phone angel. Most of all, thanks to you for being here. Couldn't do it without you. Let's get together again next time, shall we? It's just fun talking. It's nice to have somebody to talk to, right? I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a safe Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.